Well, let's grab our Bibles then this evening, and we'll get to the book of Ecclesiastes, Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Last time we discussed this, and it was, again, a little bit ago, we were walking through the beginning of, obviously, chapter 4. I have just what I did on tonight on the notes. I just kind of gave you an introductory paragraph to kind of remind you of where we're at. Remember, we hit the end of chapter 2, all right? So a couple chapters earlier, and the comment that I'd made then as we came to the conclusion of that, starting in chapter 3 with all the different occasions of life, time to be born, time to die, those things, God is now not far from the discussion or the thought of Solomon. Solomon is going to continue to interject now through his discussion of the trying to find satisfaction in this life, in this world, going to interject every once in a while, you know, this is what we have if we have life with God. Remember, Ecclesiastes, a book really of evangelism, an outreach to the world, saying the world can't offer you anything that's satisfying, only God can. And that's ultimately the conclusion of the book in chapter 12. We've got a long way to go yet. We're only in chapter 4. But God is now not far from our thoughts. So as we look here on my introductory paragraph, notice the title tonight, Something Better, Something Brief. Solomon introduced us to the frustration of the runaround of life in chapter 4, verses 4 to 8, just the preceding paragraph, ending with the observation that even the solitary person, so someone who's all by himself, doesn't have anybody to work for, can still find no peace in the runaround. He gets up and works, and Solomon asks the question, why? Why? What are you chasing after? At the end of the day, it's vanity. All right, just working in this life. So now he turns to what, in God's plan for life, is better. And you're going to find this term better coming up several times through the rest of the book. And it's a clue for us, helping us to understand that he's dangling, if I can put it this way, in the outreach of evangelism, he's dangling the carrot. Let me tell you what life is like if you have God in your life, all right? That's kind of the thing that's going on. So he's wanting to encourage the reader or whoever's picking up this long gospel track, Old Testament gospel track, right? To say, hey, there's something of value that if you put God in your life and it's better, all right? So that's the idea here. So he now turns to what in God's plan is better, striving to draw the worldling to a right relationship with God. Okay, so now let's read verses 9 through 16. It's essentially the last half of chapter 4 of Ecclesiastes. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? We know about winter, don't we? Anyways, okay. And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him. And a threefold cord is not quickly broken. So there's the first illustration. We'll stop there and then I'll come to verse 13 in a minute. So this is something that what I call something better. What's the something better? Well, relationships, as you're looking at your notes, relationships are a gift. Or they're a good, the word good is your blank there, from God. That's the word better, the Hebrew word for good, what's valuable and worthwhile. Relationships are what's good from God. Now, we see here in verse 9 that relationships provide purpose for our toil. So, when God is added to our life and we begin to understand the value of personal relationships with one another, it now provides some value, some worth. Remember, without God, this whole world is vanity, vanity, all is vanity, all right? No worth, no value. You put God in and now your toil becomes something that I do for a relationship. So relationships provide purpose for our toil. Why is it that I'm your pastor? Well, I'm just picking on myself. Any of us could ask the same question. Why do you do what you do? Well, you would like to think that your job has great value and you're going to accomplish great things. But at the end of the day, some of the reason I do what I do is because I want to take care of my family. We've joked in our house, If the kids don't like something, well, wait a second, daddy's money paid for it. You're going to like it anyway, all right? And mommy's a lazy bum. She doesn't work for anything. No, it says, no, that's not true. She does a lot of the work behind the scenes. But just for fun, the bottom line is some of the reason I toil at the work of ministry is so that I have, because I want to care for my wife and children. And that's not a bad thing. That's an honorable thing. In some of all the discussion that was going on last night on some of the things I stepped in and Dad was watching the returns, and one of the commentators talked about these people need to just go out and get a good job and start hanging drywall and painting. He says that's, and then, and it's like, and he was wondering, that's an honorable thing. Well, when God's in the picture, it absolutely is. Any of our work and our labor that God has given us to do has purpose when I have somebody to do it for. The joy to come home to a family. So two are better than one because the relationship is the reward. As I labor and work in this life because I have a relationship with someone, we think of family, but it could be that I labor. Let's go to the New Testament real quick, Ephesians chapter 4. And let him that stole steal no more, but let him rather labor with working with his hands the things that are good, so that he may have to give to him that needeth. Talking about a relationship there. One of the reasons I work and labor, why? So we can prosper the work of the ministry here. That's why we tithe and give offerings. We help one another serve the Lord. That's a delight. That's a reward, is it not? Behind the scenes, as the deacons and I are using the deacons fund to try to help and encourage someone that's in a time of need in our church family, that's a great delight. What joy. We talked at Sunday night, you know, about getting the new church sign so that our advertisement's better. We're pulling our funds. We've used our funds to help reach out to our community a little bit better, build another relationship. One of the couples that was visiting with us Sunday morning, they came because they found us on the internet. Praise God for spending some money on the website so I can build a relationship with someone. Makes sense? There's a reward in relationships. So that's verse 9. Now, verse 10, 11, and 12 go on to give some other benefits of our relationships. And when God is added in, we have perspective, right perspective on our relationships. So we see here in our notes, relationships provide protection in our toil. So in the midst of our labors of life, relationships actually provide a form of protection. Now, well, let me walk through, and I'll try not to jump on all the illustrations. Verse 10 again, for if they fall, right, so there's a relationship, and one of the persons in the relationship falls, stumbles, whatever. This is a very broad picture of any kind of problem, struggle, all right? If they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. You have someone there to help care for you, pick you up. Woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him. Guys, you have a bad day at work. The boss has been all over your case. Aren't you glad you have a wife to come home to, and she encourages your heart? All right, you get picked up again. No, you're not quite as bad as a bum as the boss thinks you are. All right? All right, that was supposed to be funny. Never mind, all right? It says, okay. That is a joy. We help pick each other up. I think I've shared the story with you in my own personal life. Now, this is in the toil of life and getting game, all right? I was out hunting. I learned my lesson in a just dramatic way. Never hunt alone. And I remember spending, there are times when I was younger, it was like, go out in the woods. Yeah, go after the game, and you're out there by yourself. You don't even think twice about the danger you're putting yourself into. This was long before cell phone days and all those kinds of things. Of course, you're up in the mountains, the cell phones don't work anyways, right? So what do you do if you have a problem? Well, I was out hunting one day, early in the morning, getting up in the tree for the deer hunt of that day, and I dislocated my shoulder on the way up. I dislocated it before, dislocated it as I fell out of the tree. It was all icy, fell out of the tree. It's like, Well, it was so good that I could scream and holler for my friend Jim, Jim! Because I was in a lot of pain, all right? I'm glad I had someone to lift me up. If you want to know the rest of the gory details, I'll tell you later. Some really funny things happened in that whole incident. But I'm glad that as I walked out of the woods that day, all wrapped up in my drag rope to keep my shoulder immobile, all right, so it wouldn't hurt anymore, I'm glad I had a friend. Because that wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have gotten that shoulder back in probably by myself. Who knows where I'd be today? Anyway, sorry. Right. Does that make sense? Aren't you glad that we have friends and relationships that when we hit a low time, when we fall? So our blank here, relationships provide protection in our toil. They provide a helping hand. You see, God adds value to our relationships, and we see that my relationships give me a helping hand. And what's a blessing. Verse 11, here's the next blank. A caring hand. A caring hand. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? Now, we, in our Western mind, in our modern Western mind, we can't think of really sleeping with anybody but other than our, like, our husbands and wives, all right? But it's not uncommon even to this day in Middle Eastern countries. You're in the desert. What happens at night? The desert's hot in the day, and what's it at night? It's cold, all right? It was good to have a traveling companion. So you're out, and all you got is your cloak and your buddy. And guess what you do? Back to back, you sleep together. Why? Because you get warmth. You have a companion to help care for your needs. There was a reason why the family slept all together. That was the common lot. You know, dad at one end, mom on the other end, the 12 million kids in between. All right, there you go. All right. Well, not quite many 12 million, but anyway, so you got the picture. All right, that provided care. This is, again, a wonderful illustration of how relationships, we care for one another. I'm really glad when I'm sick that I'm married. I get spoiled, I do, and I'm grateful for it. And I will tell you that I'm glad to help my wife when she's sick. Yeah, it takes time, it takes effort, but she needs help. Aren't you glad that we can have a caring hand, that we provide warmth to each other, right? Verse 12, a strong hand is your blank there. So if there's one, prevail against them, right? So you have, all right, there's this conflict, there's this problem, whether it's fisticuffs, or there's a problem at work or whatever, but if you're all alone, and the guy is bigger than you, the bully wins, all right? As a little kid, you know, I've never been real big. Every once in a while, for some reason, I got on the wrong side of the school bully, and that was not a nice place to be, all right? All right, but if I had friends, you had some protection, and that's what verse 12 is saying. But if there's two can withstand one mean person, all right? And you get three of us, and hey, we got a pretty good chance of winning the battle, all right? Aren't you glad that relationships provide strength and encouragement? Now, the applications are numerous, but here, let me make the application real quick to us here. I hope tonight that you leave here tonight encouraged. Many of you have come in, and a couple of you even chatted with me. It's like, oh, what's going on in this country? This is discouraging. And it is. It is. I hope tonight that you can find encouragement, strength in the battle as we've come together in the relationships that God has given us. Our perspective, Lord willing, enhanced, getting our eyes in the right place again, being able to go face the battle of this world and life far better because we have friends that have helped us. Isn't that a joy? So better. Relationships are good, especially when it's drawn in with what the Lord teaches us. Now, he goes on then. So that's something that's really better in life. The only way that we can understand that truly and the only way that that relationship can be right is when God is in the mix. For Solomon to add a threefold cord is not easily broken there at the end of verse number 12 is probably a wonderful, and it's used this way. It's often talked about God being in the relationship. We have two in a relationship and God's added in. What a blessing, what a help, what a strengthening that gives. So Solomon putting the carrot in front of the worldling again. Listen, you want some blessings of a relationship, not being all alone, solitary, and chasing after the runaround that has no purpose and value? Well, if you have God's perspective on relationships, there's value to life. It's a lot better. He goes on now in verse 13. So in this I have not read yet, so here's another better. And he's using this as a jump-off point to really looking at what's bad when you don't have God involved. So verse 13, better is a poor and a wise child. And I think Solomon intends for us to understand that this is a child. It's a young person, but that has God in their life. And they have what our memory verse talked about, or is going to be working on this week, they have more understanding than their teachers because they meditate on God's law. So better is a poor and a wise child than an old and foolish king who will no more be admonished. Now, verse 14 is talking specifically about that king. So both lines of the poem here in verse 14 more than likely are referring back to the king. For out of prison he cometh to reign. So even if this king has come all the way maybe from a prison house, maybe he was the enemy and the circumstances of life turned that he then became the king of the nation, or the other possibility, whereas he was also he that is born in this kingdom become poor. Notice the phrase he that is, all right, is in italics. The translators are trying to give you the sense. More than likely it's a reference to the king. So whether he's come from the prison house or the poor house, and risen to kingliness, yet if he's foolish, stubborn, old, a wise child is better than him. Now, I considered, verse 15, all the living which walk under the sun, looking at the masses of people, with the second child that shall stand up in his stead, talking about a young person that would come and take the place of that old foolish king. And all the multitudes of people are excited about new leadership. Ah, we've got this vivacious, great young king that will lead us and be our great leader. Guess what happens to that one? Well, there's no end of all the people, you know, of all that have been before them. So we hearken back to what Solomon has already talked about, this repetition in life, this cycle of life. They also that come after shall not rejoice in this second child. Surely this also is vanity and vexation of spirit. So everyone's on board for a new king. Yeah, I'm a reminder of Israel. We want a king. We want a king. Samuel warns them, you know what's going to happen? I give you a king. No, we want a king. We want a king. Oh, isn't Saul great? He's taller than all of us, and he's led us out against the Philistines, and we're winning. Isn't that great? And then things fall apart. So look at our notes. In a second vignette, Solomon uses the betterness of wisdom, which is good, to show the emptiness or the brevity of, here's your blanks, of popularity and power. So that second child is popular for a moment. He gains great power, but it's still, as he says at the end of verse 16, vanity of vanities, all vanities. It's empty, it's worthless, it's wasted. Without God, without God's wisdom, whether you reach to the pinnacle of human popularity and power, it's still empty. It doesn't give you anything of eternal value. And a child who is poor but wise is far better off than the most powerful, popular leader in the world. Now, if this doesn't speak to the moment that we're living in right now, I don't know what does. Unfortunately, in our country, because there's been such a lack of God, God has been taken out of the picture in so many people's lives. What is government service all about? It was designed to be a service and a help to the people to enjoy their freedoms. What has it become? A source of power. And I want to be popular, and I want my name in the papers, and I want to rule over man. I want everybody to like me. Guess what? It's vanity. It's vanity. So keep on going on our notes. You see, a poor, wise child is better than an old, foolish, here's your blank, stubborn king. He'll no longer take advice, end of verse 13 there. No longer take an admonition. A child who has God's wisdom is far better than this old king. He's lived his life. Even though he may have risen from the prison or the poorhouse to become king, as I've already mentioned there from verse 14. What a grand story when someone goes from the prison to the king, to the top of the nation. We stop and think of Nelson Mandela in prison, and people still exalt him, and then he became the leader of South Africa. Well, where is he today? That's a good question to ask. Where is he today? All right? All right? Now, so, notice our notes. So a young whippersnapper, all right, verse 15, a young whippersnapper rises up in the old king's place and is very popular, but even he, at some point, will lose the interest of the multitudes and be forgotten. How soon we forget the most popular of people. I mean, we have whole podcasts and everything about, you remember this person? Oh, yeah, from the 70s? Oh, man, I totally forgot about him. He was so popular, or she was so popular back then. All right, that's life without God. You can get all the popularity and power you want in this world, and without God, it's worthless, it's empty. All right, so this wonderful vignette to help us remember that this life is brief. Popularity and power is brief. Aren't you glad that there's an eternity that's beyond this life? That even though some wicked person may gain popularity and power, they're not going to outlive God. I might as well enjoy a wise relationship with God, even though I may be poor. I'm far better off. And this will speak to the heart of people in this world who are pursuing power and popularity. And if they're honest, realize that's futile too. It's empty. What happens when I get there? Now what? Now what? And it's all empty. Ah, get God's wisdom. Have a relationship with God. And your life can be, verse 13, better. Good in every way. It can be a blessing. So, use this again. You deal with somebody that's their passion and goal, maybe someone at the workplace that's wanting to climb the corporate ladder and doing everything he can or she can to get up. Say, hey, ever considered that what happens when you get up there? Now what? Anything of valuable? You destroyed how many relationships along the way? Let me tell you something better, and then tell them about your wonderful God. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for